I'm pleased to welcome back to View from the Roundhouse, Professor Martin Drum from Notre Dame University in Fremantle. Welcome back, Martin.
It's a pleasure.
Well, it's been another busy week, although in some ways a strange week. But the one thing that did happen, Martin, was we had the Frio Federal Candidates debate at the wonderful Tannock Hall Lecture Theatre at Notre Dame in Fremantle. What did you make of the debate? We had 7 of the 10 candidates in attendance, but not the Liberal Party candidate.
Well, that's the first thing to mention. Yeah, so the Liberal Party, okay, it's a safe seat. It's
for Labor. Extremely,
for Labor, they're extremely unlikely to win it, but they are a major player, and they will almost certainly finish second again. They polled 35% in the seat last time. They have plenty of supporters in Fremantle. Sometimes they may not be as visible, but you've got to remember the electorate of Fremantle goes a long way south and east, and it's not just the Fremantle town centre. So for all those people that would have liked to see their candidate in action, they were a bit disappointed, I think, that he didn't show up.
Yes, there was a bit of an exhale of breath when it was announced the candidate wasn't there. Why do parties decide not to let their candidate appear, do you think?
I think in seats they don't win, they're worried about making a stuff up, I suspect, because you can perform well and still not win. And I thought Michaela Riley performed pretty well a year ago in the state election debate, said a lot of interesting things, but obviously she wasn't going to win. You know, it's a landslide victory to Labor. But I think she still set herself up perhaps for another tilt somewhere else. But a lot of candidates are worried about making a mistake and, you know, the party coming down on them quite heavily as a result. So they're a bit reticent to fully engage if they're not in a winnable seat. And I think that's a bit of a shame because regardless of whether a seat's marginal or not, we want to hear all the different sides of the coin. We want to hear all the different perspectives and what they're offering. And it would be helpful if they were there to fly the flag.
Well, we did have a lot of other candidates, as I've said, 7 of the 10. We had Sam Wainwright from the Socialist Alliance, Josh Wilson, the sitting ALP member, Stella Ginman from the United Australia Party, Felicity Townsend from the Greens, Jan Lowe standing for the Lib Dems, Janisha Knapp for the WA Party, and William or Bill Edgar from One Nation. Now, a lot of those smaller parties in terms of the votes they garner at federal elections were in attendance and some of them quite entertaining, and we'll come back to them. But why do these small parties run? Some of them hardly get 1% of the vote.
Well, the rationale is supposedly, and there's fairly limited evidence, but there's, you know, that if you have a lower house candidate, it improves your upper house vote. So I think that sometimes they think they're having, you know, we just talked about having a voice and flying the flag a second ago. And for those minor parties, it gives them a face. They can put their placards up. They can encourage people to support them. For local supporters, it's good to have a candidate. So there's a lot of probably low-level benefits for some of these minor parties in standing a candidate. I think for the individuals themselves, it's their opportunity to have a say. You know, there's a couple hundred people, who knows what, 150 people there last night. Not last night, it was Tuesday night. And I think that's an opportunity to get their message across.
Well, it was quite entertaining and a wonderful account of the evening, actually. Appeared in Crikey the next morning. But what did you make of the evening sitting there and watching the candidates address issues?
Oh, look, I thought it was a really lively and entertaining debate. It was probably one of the most interesting debates that we've seen, just because of the colour and the vibrancy. You know, I think Steve Grant gave all of the candidates a fair bit of license to have their say, so everyone got a fair crack at it. There was plenty of points of difference. You know, we talked about the Liberals not being there, but, you know, you had One Nation, the Liberal Democrats, United Australia Party. So there was plenty of different types of candidates there that had different points of view. And then on the other side, you had Labor and then the Greens and then Socialist Alliance, you know. So broadly speaking, there was a lot of life and energy in the room, and some of those candidates had plenty of their supporters there. So, you know, they got a rowdy reception whenever they spoke. Yeah, it was quite a lively evening with quite a plethora of different views offered.
If you relied only on what people said at that debate, what would appear to be the issues of importance in Fremantle?
It was interesting because the organisers, of which yourself and myself are both part, we tried to ask a question around what are the local issues in Fremantle, what's one local thing that you'd get done for Fremantle. Most of the candidates still segued into the national agenda. So climate change was obviously front of mind, and no one's saying climate change doesn't impact on us locally. However, I think we'll probably, you know, after something of specific interest to Fremantle that might differentiate that for them from a candidate from somewhere else. We didn't get a real lot of that. So, you know, it was mostly just talking to the national issues. But I probably, of the single biggest issue that got to run was one that it's largely been resolved in a way, and that's the end of row 8 and row 9. You could still see that there's plenty of passion around that issue. And, you know, that got a good reception in the audience. But, of course, you know, that was largely resolved with the election of the Labor government in 2017. They discontinued that project and they're gradually recalibrating the land so that it can't be used for that land use anymore. So, but I think it still elicited strong emotions in the room. There was a bit of discussion about getting Fremantle going and the local economy there. Probably the other interesting issue that got a run is the port. And several candidates said that the port is a really important economic player in Fremantle and shouldn't be lost. So I thought that was quite interesting as well.
Some of the candidates.
Notwithstanding, it's pretty much more of a state issue than a federal one, but it's still a really interesting discussion.
Yeah. And you can never discount, I suppose, what motivates candidates when they go to the federal poll. If they've lost faith in a state-based political party, it could possibly carry over, I suppose, into their federal vote.
That's right. So, you know, I think trying to separate those issues out, I think Josh Wilson tried to draw that distinction a couple of times when he was sort of quizzed on issues that were more state issues and that a federal candidate has more limited ability to solve. But, you know, there's a lot of issues still that have a crossover, like health and education, where both federal and state are involved. So, you know, voters might have quite a bit of trouble distinguishing between them, really.
Social housing is another one of those, I suppose.
Yeah, so housing got a run and homelessness, and pretty much all the candidates said that it was a disgrace that we had so many people without a house and that a lot needed to get done about it. So that wasn't in dispute. There were a few different types of, solutions offered around that, everything from finding them houses through to other bits and pieces. But I'm really hoping that, this issue gets resolved. I think we all are. Everyone, no one wants to see high levels of homelessness in the community.
Late in the debate, a question from one of the people in the crowd to Josh Wilson concerned how Labor, if elected, might deal with the refugee question, which has lingered in this country for a long time, people being held in detention. It seemed to me at the time a very interesting answer. How did you assess it?
It was really interesting. So I think you're speaking primarily of Josh Wilson's response here as yes, both the person most likely to be elected and then, you know, given that there is a, you know, reasonable chance we could see a change of government and it could be a Labor government. So he seemed to indicate that, firstly, he said that the current system was a disgrace, but he seemed to indicate that there were substantial changes on the way. He explicitly mentioned temporary protection visas, which is Labor policy to abolish those. But it will be very interesting. He seemed very much against indefinite detention of asylum seekers. So it will be very interesting to see how far that's pushed in a Labor agenda once they win office.
The other thing that's been happening off and on, but not on the ABC, Martin, has been the debates between the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, and the Leader of the Opposition, Anthony Albanese. Have you had the chance to tune in and watch the shenanigans or the edifying or the unedifying experiences?
Well, we had to. I mean, the last two debates, I'll reflect on those because they've just happened over the last week.
And they were free to air.
That's right. The first one wasn't free to air. Good point. The last two, Channel 9 and Channel 7, and they were very different debates. So Channel 9 is almost like the moderator just let them rip. And actually, there's a segment where they quizzed each other. And look, that sounds great in theory, but they just ended up yelling at each other, which was probably not very helpful, very unedifying, I thought, and probably just switches voters off. Alternatively, some people reckon that that makes for great TV. I don't know that the voters learn much from that. I think that the last one that Seven ran last night was more informative overall. I think there was some, at least a few policies getting discussed. Probably the biggest single flare-up was the possibility of a wage rise for the lowest income earners, you know, minimum wage earners. And Anthony Albanese seemed to suggest that 5% was ideal, and Scott Morrison was very much against that. And, you know, that's a significant issue. It doesn't just actually affect minimum wage earners. A lot of other awards are connected to the minimum wage. So you actually had a new major policy difference being dissected there.
Just on the question of the ABC, the national broadcaster, why haven't they traditionally do, got a gig in these debates?
It was very interesting. Yeah, that's a very strange one. Normally the ABC's always one of those three debate hosters. In fact, I think there's been times where there's been one debate that's been hosted by the ABC. I can't answer that straight off the bat because it seems to me to be strange, especially as you had a Sky News one, which wasn't on free-to-air television. So you would have thought having one on free-to-air television would have been ideal. Now, maybe Scott Morrison didn't think he'd get a fair run with the ABC. Maybe he thought, you know, he objected to them. I haven't heard that explicitly said, though. So I'd be interested, because these things are always done by negotiation. So I'd be just interested to know why they didn't go down that path.
Well, it's just over a week to polling day, Martin. Early voting is happening as we speak. I run into people in the street and they tell me they've voted. What can we expect of the major contenders, do you think, over this last week? Will they be sort of boiling it all down to a single message that they want to send out to us all, or will it be business as usual for the next 8 days or 10 to 9 days?
Oh, look, it is a fascinating one. We get the heat really is coming on. Voting is, of course, taking place. I think around 10% of people have voted already.
Wow.
So that's an interesting one to dissect and digest. I think that, you know, the polls are all suggesting that Labor's comfortably ahead. So, you know, will the Liberals try and pull out a rabbit out of the hat? Will they go really desperate and try and go hard and negative on Albanese? Those sorts of things. They've got to do something different because it's not looking great at the moment. There doesn't seem to be a lot of traction. I wonder whether voters are tuning out for both campaigns. They may well be. And if they are, that's not good news for Morrison if he's behind in the polls. I think that there is likely to be an increased vote for minor parties this year.
Let's come back to that in a moment. But just picking up on your early vote, 10% perhaps already, what's a typical number over the last few elections for early voting?
Well, it's basically been gradually rising even before the pandemic. Now, the pandemic means that some people won't come out, will be more comfortable postal voting from their own home. So postal vote rates will increase. But actually, they've been increasing for the last 10 years. I think people see it as convenient. They might want to avoid long queues. you know, they maybe they're working on the day. So where people really felt that they should vote on the day previously, they seem to be less encumbered by that now. And I would expect upwards of 40%, you know, maybe approaching half might actually vote, probably around 40% vote before the day.
Well, we don't need to discuss it now, but perhaps in the future, you from the Roundhouse will have to ask whether the sausage sizzle is now a dead event.
Well, it is. That's actually, I know it sounds really funny, but that's actually held to be one of the reasons for the retention of polling day, and in particular, retention of the excuse to have, you have to give an excuse to vote early. Now, they'll accept any excuse going around, I suspect, but one of the reasons why people are keen to see people go to polling day is that there's a good amount of money raised for all sorts of causes through the democracy sausage.
If one party, as Labor seem to be, are doing well in the polls, and there's an expectation that Albanese might be the next Prime Minister, then, as you've mentioned, one possibility over the last week is to see an upping of the negative campaign. But I guess there must be a risk in that, that the public will actually see through it and think that it's pretty dirty tactics and unnecessary, and another reason not to support the existing government.
I think it's certainly a risk. You know, maybe if you're losing, you think it's a risk worth taking. but, you know, negative campaigning tends to, yes, run down the primary vote of the people you're campaigning against, but it doesn't necessarily raise your primary vote. And if both parties are engaging in negative campaigning, and we're seeing a fair bit of that, then people will switch off altogether and maybe they'll look for someone else. So it is definitely a bit of a risk. It also only tends to change the minds of people that haven't made up those minds. So it's actually less effective on rusted on people. And I think, you know, it's just the undecideds that could be influenced. And there still might be, you know, 10% of people undecided at this stage.
Now, what do you think the major messages are going to be, that sort of the distilled message as you get towards the end of next week?
Well, you know, I don't think certainly on the Labor side we're going to see that much that we haven't seen already. For them, they're in front. I can't see them choosing to do much that's different. They have a range of different policies, but I don't think they're prosecuting an argument that they're radically different. I think that they're trying to portray that they're safe pairs of hands. For the coalition, I think that the approach largely will be reinforcing some of those messages and trying to portray Albanese as a risk or incompetent or out of his depth, or there'll be some significant economic consequences if you change the government. I expect that to be probably their broad approach.
Martin, you mentioned earlier about the independence. Is there a realistic, high probability of the mere likelihood that there could be a hung parliament?
Well, look, the independents can contribute to the prospect of a hung parliament if the result's close. So if Labor's picking up enough seats to get to 76, then it doesn't matter how many independents there are, there's still a Labor majority government. Some of the polling appears to suggest that that's an increasingly likely outcome. What it does do, if it's close, of course, it does mean that you could well have a hung parliament. Most of the independents chances that we're seeing emerging are emerging in Liberal-held seats. So they're not stopping Labor from getting to 76, they're stopping the Liberals from retaining at least 76. So what it's likely to do is significantly weaken the Liberals' position, even in opposition, if they lose some of their seats. Because some independents, if they're doing a good job, they can stick around for multiple terms in what's normally a fairly Liberal area.
At this stage, is there sort of any late mail coming out of the parties or out of the opinion polls that really clearly and positively place Labor in a very comfortable position? Is that the message we're receiving?
Look, it was interesting. We had sort of seat by seat polls yesterday that came out. And if you drill down into how some of those seats are performing, some of the seats that swung to Labor last time in some of the more inner city areas are still swinging. They're swinging further. Some of the areas that Morrison held on to in outer suburban areas are not swinging as much. So there is actually evidence of demographic change in that inner city areas are swinging away from the coalition. And it might be with people that have high levels of formal education focusing on, you know, whether it's human rights, climate change, proper funding for a whole range of things, are finding Labor's message or sometimes Green's message more appealing, whereas some of the outer suburban voters are still focused on cost of living and things like fuel prices.
So, Martin, when the election coverage starts, we're going to be told, as we just about always have been in the last number of elections, that this all hangs on what's going on in Queensland, and possibly Western Australia will come to the party for a change.
Yeah, well, we sort of said this with one or two of our previous podcasts, but typically Queensland's seen as, you know, the one of the most critical grounds. It may be that Labor doesn't make as much traction in Queensland and they are able to make ground in WA and in New South Wales and a couple of near the odd seats from other places and form government that way. It looks like the swing in Queensland may not be as big. That's only on current seat-by-seat polling. So, it's a bit different perhaps than some of the recent election outcomes. And that's why WA is really important because if the government was to change, you're probably going to need seats in WA to change.
Wow. Finally, for today, we'll have our last pre-polling day podcast next Thursday. That'll be interesting. But are you expecting anything sensational, newsworthy to happen in the next 7 days?
Well, it's really hard to predict, isn't it? Really, you know, so we've had all of our debates, you know, so not getting any more of those. And really it's going to be just, you know, different party leaders running around on the campaign trail. And, you know, any sort of, whether it's gotcha moments or gaffes or signs of weakness or, you know, the other thing is sometimes when a government's on the way out, some of their own MPs try to save their own skins by going against some of the more unpopular parts of the government's agenda. So just have a look at that, see if that happens. They're taking a bit of a risk themselves in doing so. You saw a little bit of that with Matt Canavan, who is a national senator, saying that the Paris Agreement was dead and, you know, the net zero stuff's a waste of time, et cetera. So, you know, could a couple of candidates go feral? That would make for interesting watching.
Well, Martin, as always, it's been wonderful talking to you. Great insights, and look forward to seeing where we're at next Thursday. Bye for now.
Look forward to it. Thanks, Michael.